Hello, everyone. This is Dark Journalist with a very special episode for you. Joining us tonight is former Assistant HUD Secretary and Solari Report President Catherine Austin Fitz. Now, Catherine has been documenting the $21 trillion that has gone missing from HUD and the Department of Defense. And tonight, we're going to go deep to answer the question, where is the missing money? Now, we'll look at the black budget covert aspects of this deep state disappearance of public capital and track where this program is going in terms of surveillance, advanced technology, and the creation of a global control grid. Here we go. Former Assistant HUD Secretary Catherine Austin Fitz, the $21 trillion black budget.
I can say, Catherine, it's great to see you.
It's great to see you.
So what's happening there, we're getting around to this RFK quote. One of the things that he said, RFK Jr.,
right,
he was addressing the real crisis around mandatory vaccines, this big pharmaceutical push.
Right.
He was attributing their ability to move these things out without the kind of normal safety testing that you'd get in other medicine.
Right.
To the CDC's ability to act in an emergency. So they're using emergency powers to get this stuff out and around those types of filters.
Right.
Which reminds me very much of, things, Professor Scott, for example, continuity of government, the emergency powers.
Well, you know, it was what they used to always do with the mortgage fraud. They'd clean up a lot of mortgage fraud because you'd have these disasters and then you would have emergency powers and then you could take a whole bunch of fraud and write it down into the FHA fund. So, yeah, emergencies are so useful.
Like disaster capitalism, which you've
right.
covered.
Especially when you've arranged the emergency. You know, because I used to tell people, look, it's dangerous to allow the kind of mortgage fraud to take hold in your community because you're going to have more fires. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, if you look at a lot of the big fires, they were in areas with very heavy mortgage fraud.
Yeah. This is the amazing part. Well, you, with the extensive, incredible background in government, in finance, you know, you, when you talk about HUD, I noticed you were going through those back and forths that Ben Carson was having in Congress too. Understanding that on a deeper level, it's fascinating.
Right.
Once you know something about HUD, everything opens up in a sense.
Right. Well, that one was so interesting because we had a congresswoman from an area in Virginia right outside of the DC that is full of the Beltway bandits that are running the payment systems from which the $21 trillion in missing money is disappearing from.
Mm-hmm.
So here we have a congresswoman, and I haven't gone in to look at her donations, but she's in a district which is swimming, you know, in the profits of missing money.
Mm-hmm.
And Ben Carson is called up to testify. And what does she grill him on? Not the fact that $750 billion has gone missing from HUD and nobody's identified where it went and got it back. No, she has no interest in that. She's grilling him on transgender policy. Apparently he was meeting with women groups and the women's groups from Washington they had some kind of operational logistic problems with transgender policies. I don't know the details. Anyway, but she was grilling him on something they had said. And the stark comparison of her indifference to the $750 billion. I mean, think about what $750 billion could do for people who are homeless. I mean, if you look at the women's group who was having a shelter problem, I dare say with $750 billion, they could solve their problem,
mm-hmm.
you know, and provide shelter for everybody, you know, whoever they are. But, you know, we keep taking a portion of the population, whether it's men, whether it's women, whether it's gays, whether it's transgender, and weaponizing them to distract from the fact that all of us, every one of us, 100% of the population is missing in the United States, $65,000 per person.
Right.
And I dare say, if you look at most of the problems in the United States, $65,000 per person will solve many of them.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah.
Right. Right. Now, what was very interesting, because I talked about this the other day on a internet show, and one of the commenters, I was reading the comments, which oftentimes is one of the most frightening things you can do in America. And this one woman said, you know, I used to respect Catherine Austin Fitz, but I you know, her indifference to the tragedies of transgender people, you know, is evidenced by the story I just told, you know, is just, and she's deeply unfair to the Congresswoman. She needs to prove that she hasn't done anything about the $700 billion. And you're reading this and you're thinking, God, entrainment really works.
Wow.
Entrainment really works because what I'm talking about is how important it is to focus on the issues that are harming all of us. Because that's where we're powerful. You know, if you take 325 million Americans and you get us together, you know, to take action on the things that are hurting all of us, that's when you shift. That's when you gather real power. And that's when you really shift, make a difference. If you weaponize, you know, take 325 million people, we have 1,000 issues. If we all get worked up and weaponized on our, you know, on our 1,000 issues one at a time, we go nowhere. We dead end and we never touch the power line.
Right.
So, you know, and I can take every one of those 1,000 issues and say it's important, you know, and I can understand why you care about it. But I used to have this debate with one of my relatives who would say, oh dear, the missing money is your issue. That's not my issue. My issue is peace. And I used to, she's a big Quaker. I used to say to her, don't you understand if I can steal $21 trillion, then I control whether there is peace or war.
Right.
I control. I control your issue and I control the issue of every person in America. It's about the government. You know, it comes back to what you and I have talked about many times, which is the governance system. Who controls? And I assure you, you know, if I can print fiat currency and then use that to steal, among other things, $21 trillion, I control. That's how it is.
Well, and you've made a point, too, that this level of money that is disappearing, that you've documented over two decades, $21 trillion being something that, with Professor Mark Skidmore, you could prove was missing from HUD and right. DOD. You actually extrapolated out to a much bigger figure. But you make
right.
the point that that's not the kind of money to just kind of hide away in Swiss banks and enjoy a life of luxury. It's something very different.
Right. This has nothing to do with personal greed. This mm-hmm. What we're saying is that the Constitution and the financial management laws and regulations dictate a framework of how governmental monies and taxpayer money are supposed to be run in the United States. What we're talking about is, in fact, the real framework is radically different. Now, I should also say the $21 trillion could be revenues too. So, you know, I really believe somewhere deep down in the bowels of the Army, there's a guy like Radar who's worked so hard to launder in the oil profits from Iraq so that we could pay Social Security disability. And every time he hears me talk about this, he feels really hurt because he's worked really hard to make sure those revenues get back in to support the budget. And, you know, I'm implying that he's stealing. So,
uh-huh.
so we need to remember we have a global army. And what is a global army? Global army collects up booty and money to send back to Empire Central. So some of this $21 trillion could be revenues being laundered in.
I want to talk about this $21 trillion and your two latest reports and the $21 trillion that's missing and how you've really tracked this over two decades. One thing I want to do kind of a macrocosm, microcosm thing. I want to take a microcosm story, which was a snapshot of where we are and what you think it means in relation to that big pie of missing money. And it was this story that the Trump administration was going to boot off the rolls of food stamps 750,000 people.
Right.
This is an interesting story to me because you've warned that this is where it's going, that these big mega cuts are coming in.
Right.
And certainly there's pork in government. I understand aspects of that. But I think in the larger sense, you were saying, you know, the missing trillions and understanding the money that's missing will give us something better when those chops, you know, when they put that kind of stuff on the chopping block, we'll be able to say, but what about that $20 trillion that's missing when they're screaming, oh, we have no money to support these programs anymore?
You know what this reminds me of? I have a great ally, Rob Kirby, and he and I, many years ago, had gotten to a huge fight because he wanted to focus on derivatives being the number one financial problem. And I was focused on helping someone get our state legislatures in Tennessee to give farmers a waiver so they could slaughter 20,000 chickens on their farm. And he kept saying, you know, derivatives are much more important than chickens. And I kept saying, no, chickens. For a small farmer in Tennessee to be able to be independent and feed his neighbors is much more important. And it's conditioned precedent to getting the political power to do something about the derivatives. So chickens come first. Anyway, one of the things, I live in Tennessee, as you know, and one of the things you'll notice about Tennessee is wherever you go, Tennessee is a state with amazing farmland. So when I first got there, I used to just be stunned at how it would rain and these rainbows would come out of the ground. But things just grow fantastically. There's an amazing amount of farmland fallow in Tennessee. At the same time, probably 20 to 25% of the state is on food stamps, you know, and this is before the Trump policy kicks in. And if you look at how much of those food stamps, Daniel, are basically food being trucked in from corporate farms in South America or outside the country. So now here's what gets even more interesting. If somebody has a problem with their food stamps and they call the customer service to get help, you know, they get somebody in India working for JP Morgan Chase, or they used to. I haven't checked lately. So you have, what you've created is through the federal government, you've created this food system. So instead of people growing food and then selling it to their neighbors, they're getting food stamps from the federal government. They're going down to Walmart. They're buying food that's being trucked in from thousands of miles away. I mean, if you care about climate change, it makes no sense whatsoever. And what's interesting is if you look at the economics of a lot of the local farms, they weren't put out of business by the fact that there's no demand for their products. They were put out by regulation, you know, food safety rules that make it impossible for you to do something locally. So we've built, we've used the federal budget and federal subsidies and federal regulations and state regulations to centralize control of the food system. And it's scary because if you look at how many farms are going bankrupt this year, it's an extraordinary, extraordinary number, or shutting down or going out of business. So the small farms are imploding. You have more and more centralization of the food system. And now what the Trump administration is saying is, you know, I'm sure this is driven by two things. One is, you know, because of the trade deficit, you know, the more you have to import food for the food stamps, the more pressure it puts on the trade deficit. But the other thing is you want as much food as possible to export, right? Because that's how you're going to defend your, you know, so you want to import less and you want to export more, and that puts extraordinary pressure on food. And one of the reasons I say in America, the real rate of inflation is 8 to 14% on household goods is if you look at what it costs to buy good quality food, the prices just keep going up, up, up. And I think what is happening with a food stamp is an indication of where this is all going. So if you're listening to this, you need to really think, you know, we used to make bumper stickers. Who's your farmer? Who's your banker? Where's your money?
Right.
But to me, the number one thing, when I was an investment advisor, what I used to say to people is, you know, why do you have money in a brokerage account if you have not arranged for and made the investments necessary to make sure you have a proper source of high quality food?
It's a really good question. It's a really good question because it's so essential for the survival of any civilization.
Right.
That to gloss it over or say, oh, we'll ship the food in. I mean, the way you're talking about it, it sounds like those farmers in America are actually under attack.
I believe they are. If it's very, and you know, this has been going on for decades. If you read, there's a wonderful book that a guy named, I think it was Joel Dyer, wrote called Harvest of Rage about what created the militia groups. And what had happened in the late 70s, they'd encouraged all the small farmers to take out big Department of Agriculture, but big ag loans, mm-hmm. and sort of expand their operations. And so many of them did. and they were depending on, they were growing things that had subsidy attached to them. And then Volcker took the interest rates way up, which hammered them on the debt, and then they pulled the subsidies.
Right.
And so then they defaulted on their loans, and then they sent the IRS in, and then when they couldn't pay the debt, they sent the FBI in too. And right. This guy documented the whole process, and you had a huge wave of farms just put out of business. And of course, the corporate guys coming around and picking up the land mm-hmm. for cheap. There's a wonderful DVD called The Real Dirt on Farmer John. Have you ever seen it?
That's an interesting one. Yeah.
Yeah. And, but it's about a young guy who lived through that, and he describes how extraordinary painfully it was. And they almost lost the family farm, but he was able to convert it to CSA and organic, and so did an extraordinary job. So I, you know, the time has come for everyone listening to this to really seriously think, where is your food coming from, and how do you make sure that you can trust the quality of that food?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's, this is not just about the price, it's about the quality. And our food system has become very, very dependent on imports and on long transportation lines that would make me very nervous. Now, it's really interesting because I've been watching the inflation statistics. And again, I think the inflation rate in the United States for household goods is kind of 8 to 14% depending on where you are. But I'm watching the price of food go up and up and up. And as a real gauge of inflation and sort of the money printing. And I'm thinking, how are the politics of this going to work in 21, 22, 23? And then all of a sudden last year, I'm on all these email lists that get the, you know, that get the investment advisory stuff. All of a sudden, it's like somebody threw a switch, and I'm getting massive amounts of mailings about the different companies that are making plant-based meat and how great their stocks are going to do. You know, they're really pushing these stocks. And Daniel, it's all at once, out of no place. And big encouragement in making money on this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to Canada and drove from, I came up through Michigan and then drove to Halifax and then up to Cape Breton and then back. I drove up through Ohio and then came back down through Michigan. So going across, and of course in Canada, everybody goes to Tim Hortons. Well, everything is Beyond Burger, Beyond Sausage, and it's like that. All of a sudden it's everywhere.
Wow.
So it's everywhere to the investment advisors and it's everywhere in the fast food restaurants. And I thought, that's how they're going to do it. There was a professor at Berkeley who came out and said, basically all this stuff is, you know, the same ingredients as dog food.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever it is, this is their way of jumping the curve. This is their way of jumping the curve on inflation. So mm-hmm. rather than having anybody notice that the price of meat is skyrocketing, you'll just have them start eating, you know, soy with some kind of chemical that makes it look like blood. You know what I mean? And right. that's how they're going to jump the curve on inflation. And of course, there's, you know, it's, I always love to listen to what I call the climate change op, because F-35s are not a problem. Nuclear testing is not a problem. Upper atmosphere nuclear testing is not a problem. Depleted uranium is not a problem. Global spraying is not a problem. HARP is not a problem. CERN is not a problem. What is a problem is cow farts.
You're right.
You know, because we're now up to over $2 trillion overtly on the military budgets. So you're listening to him roll out the numbers, and you just cannot imagine, given all of this stuff, that anybody really is worried about cow farts.
Yeah, right. Well, you made an interesting observation about these, the study that was done about all the nuclear testing that had taken place and how it had really shredded the atmosphere in a way that it wasn't going to come back potentially. And that might be, you started to connect the dots. Maybe that's why they're pushing into space and why they've kept it secret for 50 years between moon landings. The last one we had was 1970.
Well, yeah, my number one, you know, I have a lot of unanswered questions. Every quarter when we do the news trends and stories analysis, we have a section called unanswered questions. And the unanswered questions to me, you know, one, they just keep getting longer. The big one being, you know, what is the governance structure on planet Earth? Because the financial system is just a subset of the governance structure. And if you don't understand the governance structure, then it's impossible to figure out how to re-engineer the financial system. Anyway, but so number one question is, what's the governance structure? Number two question is, whoever it is, and you know, my nickname is, it's Mr. Global, you know, so we'll just use Mr. Global. Whoever it is, what is Mr. Global concerned about? What are the risk issues that Mr. Global's managing? Because I think Mr. Global is managing a lot of risk. And what I've seen since the mid-90s, you know, Mr. Global seems to be coming more from fear than from a desire to rape and harvest and control. You know, there's some kind of fear. That's what it feels like to me. And the question is that geophysical risk? Because we do know that the electromagnetic field is weakening. We do know that the oxygen content is lowering. Now, let's go back, because I know you're very familiar with all the work that's been done to disclose what's happening in breakthrough energy. Mm-hmm. You know, starting with Tesla, we've had extraordinary low-cost options for energy on this planet. But instead, we've used energy options that cause the oxygen content to go down. And we know if there's anything we could do that would destroy life on this planet, it's to lower the oxygen content.
Right.
Why are we doing this?
Yeah, right.
Why are we doing this? You know, there's, and I, you know, money is used as an incentive system and a management technique and a control technique. But I assure you, we're not doing it because it makes money. That's not, you know, there's a strategic issue as to why we're doing what we're doing. And to me, I don't know, but I, as you know, I believe the reason they globalized so quickly in the 90s was because they wanted to build a multiplanetary civilization, and you needed India and China and Asia and all the Asian engineering capacity to do that. Uh-huh. So I believe they were in a rush to build a multiplanetary civilization. Now, if I was in Mr. Global shoes, I'd be in a rush to build a multiplanetary civilization as well. Because you never want to bet the ranch on one planet. You know, diversification, diversification, diversification. So for the human species to bet the ranch on one planet doesn't make any sense.
Well, you've done more, absolutely. And you've done more on the space economy, which I don't think people understand because it's so, you know.
It's so funny. Our first big push on the space economy was we wrapped it up in 2015 wrap up. Uh-huh. It's called Space. Here we go. Remember, you had a little businessman in a spaceship with his tie flying out. He's going to space. So that was 2015. And then we did, in the first quarter of 2017, a big push on the space-based economy. Mm-hmm. And each time we did it, I can't tell you how much feedback I got that this was like very out there.
Right.
You know, this was very – and I thought, you know – this whole planet is being controlled from space.
Yes.
All the most powerful weaponry is in space. I mean, we globalized investment when the satellite system went up. Mm-hmm. We're trying to run everything globally through the satellites and the smartphones and the cell tower. You know, if you look at the action, we're going from a world when the United States became the reserve currency. So World War II, let's go back. 1870, the U.S. economy surpasses England as the biggest economy. So the U.S. becomes dominant economically, but it's not until World War I that the dollar starts to trade equivalent as a reserve currency with sterling. Then the Depression hits. It's probably MI6 trying to make sterling was in charge. And then finally, World War II. So we share reserve currency with the sterling from World War I to World War II. Then World War II, the dollar becomes dominant. Okay. That whole world was a world of sea empires. You know, what did the UK and the United States have in common? They had control of the sea lanes. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until the GPS global satellites went up at the end of the 70s or in the 70s. And now, you know, we were dominant with the only global system until the Europeans just got theirs and the Chinese are working on theirs. But we are now then moving from a naval empire to a land empire. And that's what the whole BRIC, Silk and Road thing is about. But it's made possible by the fact that now control of the planet is not just the sea lanes, it's the satellites.
Yes.
You know, and that's without getting into a question of what about that $150 trillion floating around out there that nobody can explain or will explain.
Yeah, so, well, it's a, we talk about secret space program, but it's a secret space economy.
Right. Well, you know, I'll never forget. I don't know if you remember when CBS got suppressed on the sarin gas story.
Yes.
You remember that? It was in the 90s. And I remember talking to the producer who'd gotten fired. He's a very capable producer. And the whole story had been run through the general counsel's office. It was vetted 100%. And then they cut the story and, you know, did a mea culpa and killed the whole thing. And the producer got fired. And I said to her, what happened? And she said, you know, our feed depends on the satellites and they're controlled by DOD. And if DOD does not want the story, you know, if the feds don't want the story, they control our satellites and our feed. So if you're a financial firm or you're a media firm, you're dependent on whether it's the, you know, the sea cables going underneath the sea or the satellites above, you're dependent on those two feeds and the military controls.
Yes. Yeah. And that's the thing. It's the control from above. So it's like, when it gets
and below, remember, you know, that's the hard thing to understand about space is so much of the space operations depend on the underground bases, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like we're the white part in the Oreo cookie. So you've got the above and you've got the below, whether it's the underground cables or the, the satellites, you're dealing. And it's hard for most people because it's so invisible. I was stunned when I published Space Here We Go and the space-based economy that, you know, because subscribers were having their families tell them, oh, well, this is very out there. And I was, are you kidding? Do you think your smartphone could work without this? What do you?
Right.
This is not out there.
Yeah.
Right.
Google.
So if you look at the, one of the things I covered in space-based economy is some of the Wall Street firms finally did big studies on space. And then one of the things that they pointed out was that the killer app was expected once you have 5G go in and the Internet of Things, because a lot of that's going to run off the satellites. The killer app was self-driving cars.
Yes.
Now, I know that's not true. The killer app is digital currency.
Oh, right.
Right. Right. Yeah. Right. Right. But cars will be an ATM machine. So, you know, it's all integrated.
Right. Right. Well, it is fascinating. As we go into 2020, then looking at this, is space on the table? Does that something that gets into that conversation when everyone comes out and deals?
Well, here's the thing. You're seeing a lot of headlines now that are coming. So we're getting a lot more coverage in space on space. But two things you're seeing is major competition between Asia and the G7 on over the moon and who's going to develop the moon, who's going to control the moon. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure you saw the headline about China announcing a $10 trillion economic development zone on the moon.
Right. and on the dark side of the moon.
Right. Right. So, you're seeing incredible economic development competition in and around the moon. So that's number one. Number two, you're seeing the governmental budgets increase enormously. I just saw a headline, I forget how much, but the EU space budget jumped enormously. And of course, part of the problem on Brexit is how is the UK going to come out of the, you know, sort of renegotiation their position because their space program is intertwined with the European. So you're watching very, very big budget increases on space. At the same time, 750,000 people may be thrown off of food stamps.
Wow.
And so people are starting, you know, I always said the reason for the financial coup d'etat was they wanted to make sure that instead of paying for nursing homes, they could put the money in space.
Wow. Yes.
And now, you know, I think now with the way the headlines are veering, it's becoming more and more obvious that's the case. Because think about it, the pension funds are being emptied out by low interest rate bonds that are financing these budgets. So, you know, if I'm getting 0%, if I'm getting negative 2% on the bond that's financing a sovereign government who's pouring this money into space, that is a current transfer from your pension funds subsidizing the sovereign governments doing that.
And so, is it in plain sight, or is it utilizing secrecy so that people can't get at that information?
Some of it's in plain sight. I think a lot of it's secret. You know, when a congresswoman from Virginia is interested in the bathroom policy of a shelter in Washington, but is not interested in $750 million missing from HUD.
Yeah, right.
you know.
Selective yeah. censorship there.
Well, the time has come. This is my speech. The time has come to integrate how the money works, whether it's how the money works in your neighborhood, whether it's how the money works on the vaccine issue, whether it's how the money works on the missing money in government. All these things are connected. And right. So I was trained as an investment banker, and I was trained my whole life to integrate how the money, you know, the first thing I do when I look at a company or I look at a neighborhood is how does the money work here?
Yeah.
So we have a great Salier report called Mapping Your Local Ecosystem to help people learn how to do that. Mm-hmm. But what I find is most people have been trained to not integrate and look at how the money works. It's always been, I was just having a back and forth with a wonderful, really marvelous person who's done so much and been so courageous and fearless on vaccines. And I said to them, you've got to integrate the money piece. You keep telling me you don't care. I mean, I can take any family with a severely injured vaccine child, and I can literally say, okay, you're donating money to a university that is investing in the company that made the vaccine that did this. You are donating to a church whose endowment is investing in the stock of the company who did this. You have a pension fund. Your pension fund trustees and the money managers are investing in that stock. You have a 401k and an IRA, and you're investing in mutual funds that are investing in that stock. And all that money pouring into all that stocks is generating the capital gains that pay the law firms and that generate the political contributions that make this whole system go. Because they pass mandates and laws that increase profits, that generates capital gains, that generates money for the law firms and the campaign contributions. It's around and around we go. That's why when I wrote my online book, Dylan Reed and the Aristocracy of Stock Profits, it was to show people that was on private prisons, but how the game works. So you have this negative loop between the politicians, the law firms, the lobbyists, and the corporations, where they're all working to generate capital gains, and they don't care, you know, relatively whether or not it builds up the real health and well-being of the population and the real economy. We've seen the regular economy's assets stripped basically to pump up the stock market. And that's why for many years, I called it the Popsicle Index. So the Popsicle Index was a quality sort of an indicator of the well-being of a place.
Right.
And the people and the animals and the living things in a place. So call it the people in the environment. And so we are doing things that destroy people in the environment, you know, but it makes the stock market go up. And you've got to connect the dots, because the real solution is to change the model to, instead of having a win-lose relationship between the stock market and the Popsicle Index, you want to have a win-win. Mm-hmm. So that the corporations can make money by doing things that make people healthier and make places more wonderful. So you have to connect the dots with the financial system, or we're never going to make progress on any of these issues.
Well, it's interesting because that's the real money map that we need. You know, you'll find that there'll be advertiser boycotts if so-and-so says something off color on a show, you know, and you have all the action. But around this, it's just this vacant thing.
Well, it's really funny because, I call it the shriek-o-meter, The shriek-o-meter has been very clever at doing this. Mm-hmm. So, for example, you have, I don't know much about it, but say 5 or 10 years ago, you had a boycott movement started vis-a-vis Israel and their policies vis-a-vis the Palestinians. And right. So suddenly you're watching laws being passed all over the country saying you're not allowed to boycott money. And so when, for example, you had the flooding in Houston, everybody had to come in who got disaster. We're back to disasters, disaster recovery money. You had to sign saying you would never boycott Israel. Well, what does that have to do with rebuilding your home from a flood in Houston? You know? And, you know, but they're very clever at either using this. So let me give you a perfect example. This is my favorite example because I have to say you're from Massachusetts.
Yes.
Elizabeth Warren is the poster child for most of what's wrong in this country. It's unbelievable. So I never get tired of pointing this out. So in the first week of October in 2018, while everyone is totally focused on the sex lives of the Supreme Court nominee, we see the Federal Accounting Standards Advisory Board policy statement 56 taking the entire U.S. government finances dark.
And what do you call it? It's FASB 56.
FASB 56.
Right.
So it's sometimes called Statement 56. It's FASB is the Federal Accounting Standards Advisory Board.
Right.
So it's not FASB is FASB. Mm-hmm. That's the Financial Accounting Standards Board. This is the Federal Accounting Standards Advisory Board. Okay, so FASB Statement 56 is adopted for the federal government with the approval of the Office of Management and Budget and the GAO. So what does that mean? It means the full Congress, Democrat and Republican, everybody, and the White House, yes, President Trump, all agree that they're going to take the entire U.S. government financials dark.
Right. So no audits, no ability to see.
Oh, no, we'll have audits.
Uh-huh.
But you can exclude whatever you want from the audits, keep it secret and not tell anybody what's excluded.
Okay.
So when you look at the audited statement, it's totally meaningless. I have no idea what it means, you know, and not just for the 24 covered agencies, for 150 other corporate entities. And when you combine it with the classification laws, you know, it includes all the big corporations and banks doing business with government. So now when you look at JPMorgan Chase's financials, they're meaningless.
Right.
Because they can get a classification waiver that says they don't have to comply with, they can get a waiver from the National Security Director that waives them from all or some SEC requirements, and you can't know what.
So we can look at FASB 56 can almost be the dividing line. I mean, things were already murky enough on financials with the government anyway. But we can really look at that as a dividing line now where they're really taking that dark. And so this FASB 56.
And so here's what you need to understand. On October 4th, if he had been my client, I could have told Jeffrey Epstein he was a dead man. Right.
Why?
Because you just went from having to do all these complicated, expensive money laundering to the low fee solution. Mm-hmm. This is like the ETFs of the black budget or the index funds of the black budget. You just said, okay, we can do whatever we want, whenever we want. We don't need all these money laundering operate. We don't need the Clinton Foundation. We don't need Epstein. We can just do whatever we want through government accounts. We can take it black. We don't need to be bothered with all this dysfunction. Now we can just do whatever we want. I mean, it's really, they're going to save a lot of money on fees.
They got rid of the middleman there in Epstein's case.
Okay. So let me get back to Elizabeth Warren. So this, we have now, let me stop for a second. why, if the U.S. economy became the most powerful economy in the world in 1870, why did it take almost another century for it to become the reserve currency? Why did the sterling maintain its role until the end of World War II as the lead reserve currency in the world? Why? You know why? Because the Brits had the deepest, most liquid capital markets. London was the financial center of the world, and they had the big markets, the big liquidity. Okay, so now remember, what is one of our greatest powers as a reserve currency? Not just that we're, you know, one of, if not the biggest economy, we have the biggest, most liquid capital markets. What did FASB 56 do? FASB 56 just took 70 or 80% of our capital markets dark. You can't have liquid capital markets without transparency. You can't have a big liquid capital market that's black. You can't.
Right.
You know, there. I don't think there's enough mind control in the world that can make that work.
Uh huh.
But okay. So while these guys are passing this thing to take our entire securities markets dark, what does Senator Warren do? The month before, in September, Senator Warren puts in a bill that says SEC should require significant non-financial disclosure on climate change. So don't worry that the financial disclosure that made our markets great is being destroyed. Let's just worry about making sure that these companies talk about climate change, right? So she passes a bill that will require, I mean, if you look at what it's going to require corporations in terms of cost, a nightmare. She puts it in September, and then I think it was literally the day they adopted FASB 56. It's in the it's in our new wrap-up on ESG. Five of the largest investors in the country send a letter to the SEC saying that they want the SEC to adopt this. And so Senator Warren and five big investors, five of the top investors in the country, are basically creating a whiteout using climate change.
Amazing.
So they're using non-financial disclosure to white out the fact that we are destroying the financial disclosure that is necessary to have a competitive capital market. And it's so, the hubris and the hypocrisy of it are really beyond, I cannot find words to describe. You look at it and you think,
wow,
you know, aliens must exist because Elizabeth Warren must be one of them.
Well, she's working hand in glove with that system. Everyone, I'll remind you, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. We're here with former Assistant Secretary of HUD, Catherine Austin Fitz, who is also the president of Solari. I want to revisit this assassinations thing real briefly. First, we had a series of bankers who showed up dead. And you were looking at a lot of those cases and saying they're deleting databases.
Right.
And then we had the holistic doctors showing up, one of them, Bradstreet, working around this area of cancer cures.
Right.
And they all seem to have that thread somewhere. It was in relation to cancer cures. A lot of them showed up under very unusual circumstances. In his case, you know, his hotel room wasn't ready. He picked up wine and hummus, and somewhere along the line between the store in his hotel room, he decided he was going to end his life and leave the gun on the rock after he shot himself and jump in the river. So when we look at that, we could see that pattern is working.
Right, and there was, I don't know if you remember it, there was a pattern of molecular biologists as well.
Yes. Yeah. And certainly, you know, with Jeffrey Epstein's suicide and then his banker and so on, you know, we're seeing another wave of these assassinations come through. And I remember when they used to investigate the assassinations, the CIA assassinations in the 70s and 80s, whenever they would do those committees, there'd always be this wave of assassinations around it, right, for the people who were about to testify and all the rest.
Right. I always tell people, if there's a commission, don't talk to the commission. You know, because the commission is really like when they did the Enron commission, I said, you know, they're trying to figure out how to shut it down. So you get everybody together, you go through a process, you get the information. Some people get killed. Some, you know, this building blows up, you have a fire here, but, you know, don't ever talk to the commission.
Wow. But when you look at that, and I know I've spoken with some holistic doctors about that when it was happening with them, and it still is, but it was certainly pronounced there a year and a half ago. But some of them were really watching from the sidelines saying, like, what's going on? And almost like they were in hiding, you know? And understanding...
Well, it's hard. It's hard.
So understanding the deeper principles around it.
For people to understand how
the popular lexicon that is the disconnect there.
Well, here's the disconnect. There's not an understanding of how central control works. Mm-hmm. So, for example, when you used to have soccer moms get together and try and back the drug dealing out of their neighborhood, they couldn't believe the ferocity of the, you know, they were having black budget helicopters come down on their head.
Right.
And they couldn't, you know, they kept saying, I'm not important. I'm too small. And what they didn't understand is in a centralized system, you can't afford for any one neighborhood to get out. Mm-hmm. And so one person can threaten the model. In other words, there's a model and the model is highly centralized. So the model in your county is the same model, and the central control can't afford. You know, if your model can be reduced by, you know, 5% across the whole planet, it's a lot of money. So the system is highly leveraged and it's very fragile financially because of that leverage. And so people who think they're not important are very, very important. I remember I once said to somebody, they were talking about selling their company. And I said, you cannot say over the phone the amount you take. In other words, if I'm going to sell my company for $10 million and I say on the phone that I'm willing to take $10 million, that's all you're going to get. In other words, he was going to do sort of an auction process. And I said, you're going to destroy the auction process if you say on the phone how much, you know, that you would take $10 million. And sure enough, you know, he was willing to take he was willing to take X. And guess what happened? He said it on the phone. And of course, that's all he got. Wow. And he kept saying, but I'm too unimportant. I'm just a small businessman. Nobody cares about me. And that's because he doesn't understand how incredibly leveraged this thing is. And they don't miss a trick. They don't miss a dime. I think I told you the story. One of the reporters I was working with was interviewing a retired DEA agent who'd really gone to the top of DEA. And he said to her, he said, you know, all the wires batch and go through the New York Fed. They know where every penny is. Hmm. So this is a system that doesn't miss a trick.
Right.
And they don't miss a penny. And you think you're not important, but you are.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Wow. Fascinating. So that would be applicable, say, in the case of mandatory vaccines. If somebody figures out how to get around that, they create a pattern. So that person will become a major target.
Well, I wouldn't say it this way because, you know, I'll never forget. I had a great, remember when they were trying to mandate the swine flu vaccine?
Yes.
I really believe that the swine flu vaccine was very dangerous. And I called one of my colleagues in Tennessee and I said, they just mandated it in Massachusetts. And I said, I don't believe they'll be able to mandate it in Tennessee, but if they do, can I bring my guns over to your place? Because we're going to have a gunfight and I'd rather be at your place than at my place alone. He said, oh, sure. We're going to have a gunfight. Come on over here. We'll have fun. So, and I think that's when they backed off because they heard too many of those conversations.
Yeah.
But I think in the vaccines, the vaccine fight is going to, you know, they're trying to solve it with mind control and mandates, but I think it's going to have to come down to real serious civil disobedience.
Uh-huh.
And that is the only way it's going to get solved. And in the process of that civil disobedience, we're going to have to force them to become transparent on why they want you know, why they want to destroy our bodies.
Right. Right.
Right.
It has to be answered.
Right. There was a great, I have to tell you, if you haven't seen Bobby Kennedy's speech after the California legislature passed the mandate.
Yes.
He came out and gave a speech that I think will go down in history as one of the great political speeches of all time. It was absolutely fantastic. Yes. We had just given his group a donation. We support them regularly with tiny donations and encourage others to, but we had just given a donation. I called the bookkeeper. I said, give him another, you know, whatever. and we had sent them a request. They have a list of sponsors and we wanted to put Saleri there as a, you know, because I just think they do great work, but came out and one of the legislators had said to him, you know, if you keep doing this, you won't have any friends. And that's one of the threats they use.
Right.
You know, shunning and isolation is a big threat. And anybody who's got impeccable establishment credentials like he does or I do, they get that threat a lot. You know, we won't have anything to do. You won't be invited. You won't have any friends. They're very big on that. And he says this in his speech. He says, you know, I have a lot of friends. It's great.
It is anyway, his kind of transparency on this and being a major figure coming out and exposing it. They've even used his own family members against him in places like Politico.
You know something? I've had that done to me. That's one of the cheapest, meanest tricks.
Yeah.
And that was so cheap and so mean, and he didn't skip a beat.
Yeah.
He did a magnificent, you know, he Pelosi may not be able to get the impeachment done, but Kennedy can beat these tactics. He's very good.
Well, it's in the background.
What do you mean?
Well, the Kennedys themselves have been able to take on this system in a variety of ways as a family over the years.
Right.
And I think that he's made it very difficult for them to turn on the shriek-o-meter around this because he's got a lot of scientific facts on his side.
Right. He's willing to do the work.
Yes.
Right.
Absolutely. Right. I can't leave today without asking you the hypothetical about what would happen with your Missing Trillions campaign if it did go viral for 2020. If people understood that $65,000 per person and how it broke down to each individual for what's missing based on the work that you did with Professor Mark Skidmore, how would it change the tone of the conversation for the election in 2020?
So here's how I think it would change it. One, I think it would be very unifying. So instead of getting divided and conquered into all these little groups bickering about their special problem or their special need, we would start to connect the dots to we share the same problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all have a problem that we have an invisible governance structure and it's harvesting us. There's a drain. So I think it could be very, very unifying to get people focused on the problems we share in common that are the big important problems. So that's number one. Number two, what I'm hoping is it puts the productive people back in the game. And back in the game in terms of, okay, how are we going to re-engineer money county by county and place by place so that we do make America great again? Because if you look at how the money's been managed, it's not been managed to do that. And this puts the money on the table and I hope can get the productive people back in the game and say, wait a minute. You know, if you look at all the things that can rebuild the, you know, the gross county product here in this place, you know, we're not using the money accordingly. And this gives us leverage within the system to start pushing back where it's important. So,
wow.
And this, you know, so often I hear we can't fund the pension funds because there's no money. We can't do the, you know, we can't fix the water system in Flint because there's no money. That is total BS. Now, you know, money, you can't just print money. This theory that you can print money and give everybody, you know, $2,000 is crazy. Or, you know, so you can't just print money because if you look at where we are, we've got to come up with a model that makes the Popsicle Index and the Dow Jones friends. And you can't change that model unless you reverse the government investment one county at a time. It's a bottom-up reengineering that has to happen. But we have to change the model, and it's not enough to help. You know, if you look at a lot of the Democratic proposals, what they're saying is to hell with the stock market. Let's just care about the popsicle index. Well, guess what? If the Dow Jones market or the Dow Jones index crashes and our cost of capital rises significantly in the global competition, there won't be resources to fix the popsicle index. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So you've got to go from a win-lose model. It's not a matter of switching the lose to the Dow Jones. It's a matter of coming up with a win-win model. So right. You've got to change the fundamental economic model. To do that, the productive people within a place have to lead the reengineering of the government money locally. And that means we all have to connect the dots between how the money works and whatever your issue is, whether it's vaccines or the missing money or whatever, we're going to deeply have to get into the money and our own hypocrisy about the money. Uh-huh. You know, it was really funny because when I was in Washington, everybody just wanted their check. And right. That's the red button story that I've told so many times. Nobody wants to push the red button. Everybody wants their check.
Yes.
So, I'll tell you something. What Putin was trying to say, whatever he said, was the world is tired of subsidizing the United States of America. Mm-hmm. So the world is tired of subsidizing, whether we're spending the money on spaceships or Social Security disability or food stamps, the world is tired of subsidizing us.
Absolutely. And it's spaceships 2.0 because they've been around for 50 years. Right. And now it's the new models. So it's really now they're into the second tier.
Well, I want to assert a $21 trillion common law right of offset and get shares for all of us in the spaceships, right?
Exactly. Right. 100%. Incredible. Catherine, it's great to see you. And it's Solari.com. These two reports are phenomenal, The Real Game of Missing Money. It's a real thorough system. And just a quick word about what you do with the roundup, with the reports, where everyone can get that information.
So we are a weekly interview, and I do a weekly money and markets commentary. So we have things going on every week, but there's lots of great stuff.
Right.
But as you know, we try to roll up our analysis of the news quarterly and annual wrap-ups, so one every quarter and then a big one at the end of the year. And that is so very busy people understand the big trends. We do a big trend in every wrap-up, and then we do the news trends and stories analysis. That's so that a really busy person, just if they can only read or listen to the quarterly and annual wrap-ups, they're going to be the smartest person in the room, I think. That's my goal, that you're the smartest person in the room with relatively little of your time, because if you have to sort through the news yourself, it's a huge job.
Yes.
And unfortunately, a lot of the corporate media is limited to what they cover, or, it's just disinformation or propaganda. That's, right. Well, that's why, if you had told me, I was trained my entire life to only talk to 20 or less people, and then only on the trading floor in the boardroom or, at the 21 Club. And the notion that I would talk to people about money beyond that was, I couldn't fathom. The first time I got on the radio show, I was like, I'm going to talk to 4 million people about how money works. Oh my God. But, the only reason I do what I do today is I had so many horrible experiences with corporate media. They're just criminals. That's my experience. They were engaged in helping the 1% centralized political and economic control. That was their job. So whether they were lying, whether they were distracting, I've told you my stories about the Washington Post and New York Times. I just don't believe a word they say.
Amazing. I can't let you go without asking you, you've always been very brave in talking about the UFO subject and, in investment and stuff when nobody else really would ever touch it. And obviously moving into 2020, we're hearing more around the UFO file becoming public, but through a kind of corrupt lens. So how do you see it playing into the next year?
The number one sin you can make when you're an investment banker on Wall Street, vis-a-vis the investors, is a material omission.
Right.
To ask somebody to invest in something when you're withholding information that's important to their investment results, whether it's their risk or their return, mm-hmm. you know, that's a criminal act. And I think talking about these financial markets without talking about the black budget and UFOs, you're guilty of a material omission. And what's shocking to me is how many really excellent financial commentators won't touch it. They will not go there. And I think Dr. Farrell in his speech at Secret Space Program said, you know, how can you talk about the financial markets while you're pretending half the balance sheet doesn't exist?
Yes, right.
Right.
And he's made a great point of that in his books as well.
Right.
The UFO aspect, the media with the CIA's help and some of these ops like TTSA, they have a certain version of it. Like, hey, there's a threat coming. We need money. But there's a lot of interesting activity just in general, like fireballs, you know, the occurrence of fireballs, meteorites. It's all been stepped up dramatically. NASA had a simulation of what would happen if they were defending against a meteorite, and they deflected it from New York City and destroyed Denver. you know, very unusual activity there. What do you see as, you know, the leading edge in terms of the UFO aspect? It needs to be talked about, but where is it going on the mainstream side? What are they up to with it?
I don't really know. It seemed everything I've seen, with some rare exception, is you're trying to make it into, you know, I'm thinking of the blue chicken op, which you did such a good job of of shutting down. But you know, things like the blue chicken op are designed to turn it into a joke, a distraction, entertainment. So there are three spaces: actionable intelligence, news, and entertainment. And the blue chicken op is designed to take it out of actionable intelligence and out of news and move it into entertainment. Yes. Now, if you look at the TTSA?
Yeah, what's to the Stars yeah. Academy. That's Tom DeLonge. Right.
That's kind of moving it a little bit closer to news, but to keep it out of actionable intelligence.
Right.
So what my subscriber, you know, if you come to Solari, what we say is actionable intelligence to live a free and inspired life.
That's
so
great.
My goal is that you have a map of the world and an understanding that helps you navigate the world in a way that you use your time to accomplish what you want. So your time is not wasted and your money is. So nobody can steal your time and nobody can steal your money. So I estimate on my litigation with the federal government, I had to work 36,000 hours for free.
Amazing.
Okay. So that's stealing your time. Mm-hmm. So actionable intelligence gives you the intelligence you need so that you use your time and money to get to wherever it is you want to go. Okay. News is sort of, you know, what's going on. Entertainment is, you know, you have fun. Mm-hmm. So always the goal with the UFO is to move it to that entertainment space and to keep it out of the actionable intelligence space. Because if it's in the actionable intelligence space, then I can stop financing the things that are hurting me. You know, ideally I can make money not financing the things that are hurting me.
Right.
It's a power equation. So you want to keep that knowledge from translating into something that people can use to improve their individual and personal power.
Right.
And I think that's what all this stuff is. It keeps it out of the actionable intelligence space.
Well, it's amazing that you say that, because DeLonge got into some hot water recently by saying, well, we never said we were a UFO research group. We're an entertainment consortium.
There you go. There you go.
Put it right out there. You could have said it. But it is interesting, right? Because, you know, the blue chicken cult stuff, galactic ambassadors, I'm reincarnated. you know.
Well, here's the thing. The blue chicken cult, you know, or I call it the blue chicken op. The blue chicken op had so threatened, you know, it had become obvious. and it was threatening the credibility. You know, you were losing your op capacity there.
Yes.
And I think TTSA was a more credible, you know, they had to move it to out of the crazy space and into the more credible space.
Right.
But they needed to keep it, you know, they needed to make sure that the 21 trillion missing money and those stories didn't take hold.
Yes.
You know, because everybody could say, oh, well, you know, yes, it's 21 trillion, but think of what they're protecting us from, the space aliens, you know.
Right.
So it's okay. Well, you know, the marketing of the whiteout of the black budget is a 57 variety. You know, it's like Heinz 57 varieties or Baskins and Robbins, whoever it is. You know, you have this for this people and this for this people and this for this people and this for this people. And, you know, there are all sorts of different variations to keep the general population away from the power lines. Uh-huh. I call it the third rail. In a transit system, the third rail is where the electricity comes. So you want to keep it away from actionable intelligence where they can start to shift the third rail.
Right. Right, and the way that we can really pinpoint that is around the Blue Chicken Op or the DeLong thing, incredible financial systems.
So look at Monsanto. Monsanto made so many people angry about Roundup, about Terminator seeds. In my latest wrap-up, Will ESG Turn the Red Button Green?, I go into all the different things Monsanto did to make people angry, and then it hit a tipping point. And it translated into less sales, less purchases of stocks. Finally, they got taken over.
Right.
And now it's snowballed into litigation, which is really hammering the stock of the company that took it over.
Catherine, just amazing information. Thank you. We'll go even deeper in part two on the outlook for the political side in 2020 and how talking about the missing trillions can help move the needle on a variety of issues. Now, subscribers will get part two in their inbox next week. If you're not a subscriber to Dark Journalist yet, now's the time. Go to darkjournalist.com and become a member at the special rate. Catherine's work is available at Solari.com, where you can find her Solari reports. Outstanding, in-depth information. I'm blown away, as usual. Now hang in there for part two, and remember to join us here every Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern in 2020 for the X series. We have a lot of amazing things coming up for you, and you don't want to miss it. I also should mention Catherine's hashtag on Twitter is My212020. Let's give that some major action and get a conversation going. It's great to have everyone here tonight. Late breaking news, the Pentagon just confirmed that the founder of TTSA, Luis Elizondo, actually lied about leading the ATIP program. So we can see these stories and the factions are building up. So watch for a Dark Journalist special on this new development. Again, thank you everyone for joining us tonight. And Catherine, thanks so much.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.